Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two sponsors this week, Environments for Humans, promoting their Front End Summit. Literally, the URL there is frontendsummit.com. It's an online conference all about front end and like front end ops and stuff. Should be pretty sweet. A one-day online conference. Save 20% with coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW. And lynda.com, the biggest learning resource anywhere on the web. Tons of video tutorials there. Get 7 free days by going to lynda.com/shoptalk. That's lynda.com/shoptalk there. I have a course there, tons of courses there. We're going to tell you more about both of those things later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off.
Internet, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about front-endish, webish design and developments. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer. Chris.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. And with us today, we have an incredibly special guest that I couldn't be more happy to have on because she does incredible work, Sarah Swaydan.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Dave. You look great.
I feel like we unlocked one of the internet's mysteries and got down to the pronunciation of your last name. Could you say it for everyone just one time the proper way?
Yeah, it's Swaydan.
Swaydan.
Yes.
I'm sure you all know Sarah from she's just kind of exploded on the internet, at least because she does incredible work, lots of interesting tutorials, and Sarah has kind of a way of explaining things that I think a lot of people connect to, specifically recently a lot of stuff about SVG, but certainly not limited to that. SarahSwaydan.com, Sarah Swaydan on Twitter. Everybody should follow her if you're not, but you probably already are. Anyway, thanks for coming on the show, Sarah. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Good. We have your Lebanon is the country in Tyre.
Yes, it's Tyre.
Tyre, but you have another word for it. Thoud.
Yeah, the official name is Tyre, of course. But we pronounce it here. We call it Sur. It's like it starts with a heavy S. You know, in Arabic we have the light S, the sa, and the heavy S, the S, like sur.
Oh, cool. So yeah, we just spoke briefly about it from in the beginning of the show, but beautiful country. You're happy to be there, and
yeah, you should visit someday.
That would be awesome. I would love to. I've never been to the Middle East. I want to do a whole tour. We will plan it out. That'll be my next
Shop Talk road trip.
My list. Yeah. That would be great. And so, Sarah, you are independent, right?
Yes. Yes, I am.
That's great. So do you say the word freelance? You know, do you like take on little jobs and do that? Or is it more complicated than that?
No, it's just as simple as that. You know, I just take, you know, whatever job that interests me, I say, yeah, we work on it for some time and, you know, it's done. I learn something new every time. I get to have some time to write articles and tutorials, which I love. And, you know, I mostly appreciate the free part of freelancer.
What does that mean? the doing the stuff that doesn't make you money? Or...
Well, I do both. You know, it's always worth it. A while back, I was going through this phase, whether it's worth it, you know, writing all of these tutorials and not making any money out of them. But then, you know, the satisfaction that I get from people that, you know, find my articles useful. Sometimes it's a very short thank you email. Sometimes it's a mention or a tweet on Twitter telling me that they found the articles useful. I've always loved doing this. Ever since I was in school, I used to gather my friends whenever we had a break. And if there was something, you know, in a course that they didn't understand, I used to explain it for them. And at the end of that, when they were all like, oh my God, I finally understand it, that feeling was priceless. And I love feeling that feeling. So that's why I do most of the stuff I do that doesn't get me paid.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I think that's the you know, you just hear that from teachers in any field, right? Is that that is such a strongly positive feeling that they'll do it forever.
Yes, definitely. I would do it too.
That's lovely. So lately it's been a lot about SVG. Where did that, you know, for example, you have your three most recent articles are titled Understanding SVG Coordinate Systems. And that's just like such a specific part about the universe that is SVG. But it's so complicated that it deserved three very in-depth articles. Yeah, maybe walk us through that a little bit.
Well, the way it all started is, you know, I haven't been working with SVG for a really long time. I started working on it, like 2 weeks before CSS Conf, before I gave my CSS Conf talk. So I just started doing stuff and experimenting and finding bugs, a lot of them. I hate that. There was once I downloaded this SVG from, you know, a resource where they offer you free SVGs for commercial and personal use. So I downloaded that SVG and as soon as I loaded it in the browser, by that time I had no idea how to make an SVG responsive or how to resize it, scale it, or, you know, manipulate it. I didn't know how to do it. And after my CSS Conf talk, I started digging more, and I knew that the Vuebox and Preserve aspect ratio properties are really important in understanding and controlling SVGs. You need to understand them if you're going to transform SVGs, which I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to get into animations and transformations, and there was this totally different world. You know, in HTML, we have an HTML element has this simple. I still consider it simple box model. There's this coordinate system. It has a height and width. The upper left corner is the transform origin, for example. It's very simple, but as soon as I started experimenting with SVG, I got unexpected results, which I'm pretty sure that a lot of people get too when they're transforming SVGs. So I needed, you know, sometimes I tend to be a control freak, and if I don't know how this is working, I feel like, you know, my head is going to explode. So the only way that I could get over this is to dig into the Vuebox and Preserve aspect ratio attributes and learn what they do exactly. So I started reading. There are just like a couple or three maybe tutorials on the internet about this, and none of them was enough for me to understand them, to be honest. I read the specification a little. It did help because there are a few examples, but not as much as I would have expected. I wanted to be able to visualize the Vuebox. You know that if you change the value of the preserve aspect ratio, the way the Vuebox is presented inside the viewport changes. So I needed to be able to visualize that. And in order to do that, I started working on an interactive demo that started as something for me. It wasn't supposed to be something for the article. I wasn't going to share it first because it wasn't my plan. But as soon as I started to see the results, see how the Vuebox behaves whenever you change, I wanted it to be interactive. I wanted to be able to see the result of changing the values one by one. So I did it. And as soon as I was able to actually visualize them, I finally got to the point where I grokked, like really grokked the Vuebox and Preserve aspect ratio in SVG. And I thought that it took me like about 2 weeks to understand them really well. And even after that, I once had a discussion with Dirk Schulze from Adobe, and even then, you know, even after I thought that I had finally understood them, I learned something new from him. So I had yes. to write it down. A lot of the articles and tutorials that I write are first start as a documentation. I need to document the stuff that I've written for me to remember them later. And as I'm writing them, they turn into tutorials and articles, and then I publish them. And yeah, I thought that you know, the internet needed an article that would explain these concepts really well and, most importantly, visually. I don't think that, you know, personally, I wouldn't have understood them if I weren't able to visualize them. So I wanted to offer this tool for everyone to, you know, to hopefully help them understand it too.
Yeah, that's great. I think the timing is perfect for it. Not just that these things are becoming bigger and more people are caring about it, because the timing is perfect there too. But it's also the timing for yourself. I find that the perfect time to write editorial is right after the moment of where you didn't understand something and now you do understand it, because it's freshest in your mind what was confusing about it. Is it like a 2 years down the road when you understand this very well, it might be harder for you to produce a demo like this because you're just like, I don't remember what I didn't get.
Yes, exactly.
So that's cool. And so in SVG, there's this, the part one of this is viewport, view box, and preserve aspect ratio. The viewport being, that's just like if you have an SVG tag rendered in an HTML document, you can give that SVG element a width and a height. That's what that means, right? The size of the element itself.
Yes, that's what makes up the initial viewport. And once you've established a viewport, the browser is going to automatically create an initial user coordinate system, which is the view box. And it's going to have the same height and width as the viewport.
Right. Okay, cool. But then sometimes those are identical, right? That you might, you know, the view box might be like 0, 0, 100, 100, which is just in the context of that SVG, that's where those lines and paths and shapes and stuff were drawn. And the viewport might be with 100 height, 102, and if those things match, that's like very easy to understand what's going to happen. It's just going to draw the SVG in there. But it gets a little funky when the viewport and the viewbox are different, right? Let's say it's 200 pixels wide and the viewbox is still 0, 0, 100, 100. That's when it gets a little confusing, right? Because you're like, those things aren't the same anymore. What happens now?
Yeah, I like to think of it, I've written all of these thoughts inside the article as notes. I like to think of it as, you know, start with the initial view box. Before you've changed it to 0, 0, 100, 100, just think of it as being 200, 200, and then zoom in to the part that's 0, 0, 100, 100, you know, just scale it up.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like a Google Maps effect. You know, we have this big map and then you zoom into one particular area of that map. That's how I was able to visualize, you know, this use case in particular when the viewbox is smaller than the viewport.
Yeah. Cool. And then often there's space left over because there just wasn't, you know, there isn't room to fill occasionally if there's a aspect ratio difference. And then that's what preserve aspect ratio is about, right? Is that, what do you want to do? Should we render it in the bottom right corner or the top left corner, in the middle, or what, right? And I really like in your article.
Yeah. Go ahead. How you want to size it and position it inside the viewport. I like to think of it as the background image and background position properties in CSS. Like the view box is going to be the background image, kind of, and the preserve aspect ratio is going to determine if you're going to position it at the top left, top right, at the center, and you also get to specify if it's going to be covering the entire background area or, you know, just contained inside it.
Yeah, that's really clever. I like, because I think a lot of us understand that come from more CSS. And so in your article, you kind of compare those values to those CSS values. And that's super useful, I think. Cool. So there's lots of stuff to talk about for SVG. I'm sure we'll get to more of it. I just wanted to, I don't know, set the stage or a little bit about that kind of thing. Do you have anything else, Dave, or should we?
Oh, I was just going to say, Sarah, you help out over at CoDrops. Is that right? CoDrops.
Yes, I do.
That's like the demo of all demos kind of website, huh? There's incredible, like almost art going on there.
Yeah, Manuela is so inspiring. I remember when I first found CoDrops on the internet when I was just starting out in web development. And when I found it, I literally felt like I had found like a gold mine. There was so much to learn, so much to read, so much to inspire from. Yeah, she does amazing work. I focus more on the articles and tutorials that, you know, that don't contain a lot of demos that explain the concepts. And in the past 7 months, I think we started in December 2013, we started working on a pretty neat project that we're hoping to release before the end of this year, if all goes well.
Ooh. Secret project.
Secret
project. Yeah, it is.
No, that's really fun. It does seem like it grew up overnight, or I was probably just not paying attention, but it just blew up and it's exploded. It's quite a publication now. I really enjoy it.
Yep.
Well, yeah. Cool. We can get into the meat and potatoes of the Shop Talk show, but I was going to do a selfish link, if you guys don't mind. I made a website from 1994 and launched it this week.
I had no idea you were involved in that until you published that. That must have been under wraps.
That was under wraps, you know, NDAs and exclusive details and whatever. But no, it was fun, man. They called us, Microsoft, they called us and we're like, hey, we want to recreate this homepage from this GIF we have or whatever. And it was like, really? Okay. And oh, man, it was fun. I was like, I'm going to just code this. I was like, oh, it's going to be like a table and I'll slice up the thing. And then I like looked into it and it was like, dude, tables didn't exist when this was around. And so I was like, okay, scratch that. Go back. What image map? And then it was like, dude, image maps didn't exist. And so I found out.
Really?
Did
you use?
So I had to use image is map. Like as an attribute, and that means if you click an image, it'll send an XY coordinate to the server side, and then you have a server side like Perl script that processes the XY coordinates and sends you out to a URL.
Oh my god,
dude, it was pretty sweet.
I hope I'm not the only one to whom which this sound, you know, sounds like Chinese. I don't think I've understood. What did you just say?
It was just fun. It was recreating the Microsoft homepage from 1994. So it was fun, but I would love to it would be fun to do that stuff more often, or like dig up your first website and post it online.
Mm-hmm.
I might have that still.
Still have mine.
It'd nice. Be fun.
Yeah, I feel like if you're just responsible with it, you can always just chuck it at a subdomain, you know, right, and just maintain it. I wish everybody was that smart. I wish I was that smart. I have some of my like old CSS Tricks themes, but I don't have. There's plenty of stuff I've lost, unfortunately. Wah wah. Anyway, let's get into some Q&A. We have all kinds of them. A lot of them specifically for Sarah. I thought this would be a good one to start because it's kind of an interesting thing. M.E. Stevens writes in: why do you think it took us so long to start using SVG images in web development? Would you say this technology is used more now due to the flat design trend, or is it due to the fact that we're more aware of the importance of web performance and responsive design for the zoo of devices we have to cover, or what? So I guess it's a two-part question. Like, why is SVG so popular now, and why did it take so long?
I'm not sure why it took so long, honestly. I don't know. But I think that the reason it's so popular now, it's because, you know, the proliferation of retina screens everywhere and, you know, being scalable vector graphics, they perform really great on retina screens. I think, you know, this is, you know, for me, this was the reason why I started, you know, digging into SVG or paying more attention to SVG to begin with. But I'm not sure. Maybe some people have other reasons they started digging into them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one. So for you, it was the sharpness, the resolution independence. That's a big one, especially because.
Yeah.
Well, I think it didn't even like I wrote that MoPixels MoProblem article in 2012, I think, and I talked about SVG, but even then like SVG wasn't like super safe to use. But I'm looking at like can I use, and it's like 100% across the board since IE8, and Android 4 is kind of, or Android is the big outlier, but
Kind of, yeah. It's if you do look at Can I Use, it's 100% green for the current version of all browsers, the browser version before that, and the browser version before that, all across the board. And there's little differences in stuff like, do they support SVG filters and stuff? But like just the basic usage of SVG, meaning inline SVG, SVG as image, and SVG as CSS backgrounds, that's what's green all the way across the board. And, you know, I mean, of course, Sarah's 100% right. It's resolution independent. It's not a resolution independent like, oh, it works great on Retina displays. It does, but it will work on forever for no matter how many pixels we can pack on a screen, just because of the nature of them, because it's like math that's drawing them, not pixels.
Yeah.
True, that's true.
I wonder if it like, because I seem to remember a bunch of like partial support. Like you could do one thing, like you could embed it in an object tag, but you couldn't use it in an image tag and stuff like that for a long time. Do you feel like that was the truth? Does anyone know?
I don't know. There are still a lot of changes happening today, by the way. When I gave my CSS Conf talk, there was a section about whether CSS animations and JavaScript and interactions are preserved when you embed the SVG as an image in an image tag or a CSS background image. Usually, you know, before I gave my talk, they weren't preserved. If you've used CSS animations and hover interactions, for example, they wouldn't work if you embedded the SVG as an image tag or as a CSS background image. But 2 weeks after giving my talk, they worked. They worked in Chrome. The animations were preserved.
I just saw that yesterday. That blows my mind. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, a lot of changes happening every day.
Ow.
I've gone ahead and just told people that before, too. I'm like, okay, inline or SVG as image, like as an image tag in HTML with the source, is great. There's lots of advantage to that. It's totally scalable. You know, they'll look really sharp. You can resize them. You get lots of the advantages of using SVG. But you have to give up, like, the ability to, say, put a different fill color on a shape inside of it, because you just can't do that because those shapes aren't in the DOM and thus you don't really have control over them. But now Sarah's telling us like if you put an animation in the syntax of that, it'll run, which is wild. I've seen it happen.
But it didn't run in Firefox the last time I tried it.
And
that's
so
pretty wild. It's not surprising because doesn't it seem like that's like executing information? Like I'm sure from a browser vendor perspective, you have to be really careful about that kind of thing, because what else is it? Can it execute then that you wouldn't expect it to be executing?
That's the thing too. SVG also was like this like competitor to Flash, right? It was kind of designed as like this Flash competitor in browser, and maybe that's why I like didn't latch onto it right away, you know, or try to use it in a lot of different circumstances, because I was like, I don't want to use Flash, that's weird. And then your first try, just like Sarah was saying, like when you crack it open and you're like, Viewbox, what's that garbage? And then it like everything's like, I don't know, all distorted and stuff. You're just like, I don't want to use this. This is not fun.
I feel like everybody has had that experience, right? Where they're like, how do you make this SVG bigger? What are these Viewbox things? I'm just going to change those numbers and see if it'll work. And then you're like, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah, oh my God, it happened to me too.
Yeah, it's just like, there should be like a manual that's just like, don't touch the view box.
Yeah.
Leave that alone.
Or maybe just read Sarah's articles and understand the view box. And then
there you go. Yeah. Well, no, I want the BuzzFeed level education. I want the
8 things you should never do with SVGs.
But yeah, 8, if you do change the view box, you're going to be like this. And it's an animated GIF of somebody. Yeah, freaking out. There we go. That's the level of journalism you
expect. I still
find
that I don't often change the view box. I often just leave that alone. You know, but you know, whatever. I guess I don't do that as much advanced
so
things.
I may be alone on this, but do you guys hand code your path coordinates? Because I do that. Do you guys?
No, I don't. Okay. I don't. I definitely don't.
There's a Chris Nager article though that explains how like you can wrap your head around it. They're like the path syntax is its own. It's like a sub syntax of SVG. It's just very complicated. There's like an alphabet of letters that mean different things. But once you get your, I think it's possible to learn it. And I think he explains how to draw like the shape of a cross in a little article. And it's just, you know, the different letter means, you know, go to this coordinate and then turn upwards or whatever, or go to this coordinate but draw a curve between them. It's learnable. I don't know why you would. I don't think there's a future in you know, like teaching high schoolers the path syntax, just because vector software is so good at that, you know, why bother?
Yeah. Although it would be useful, you know, sometimes I draw a path in Illustrator and then I'm not very satisfied with it, so I want to change it. So it would be really nice to be able to change like a couple of coordinates or one of those letters, and you know, instead of having to go back to Illustrator and changing it and then exporting it again, it would be nice to have that kind of control.
Yeah, sure, it would be too, and even just to know when it's doing a bad job would be kind of interesting too. You know?
Yeah, true.
Like, I wonder if you draw a cross in Illustrator, does it output the same code as if you were to hand
code
create it? I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know. We'd have anyway, to test that.
That's a good one. ME, you asked why it took so long. None of us really have a good answer for that, but otherwise, except for that sometimes things just take a long time in browsers.
I was going to say, Matthias in the chat room is saying he remembers a time when Adobe, like, or SVG was close to death, like Adobe stopped developing Flash or whatever, stopped developing for SVG, like the plugin, and invested in Flash instead. And, but yeah, then Flash got Deadpooled, and now SVG is going well.
There's such a thing as momentum too in this world, right? Like the developers who work on browsers are just obviously they're just people too, and they're subject to whatever they happen to be excited about or have valued as something interesting, right? And now that SVG has some momentum behind it, I think that's encouraging browsers to support more things and support it more well and that type of thing, because of that momentum.
And that was probably Retina's fault, I would say. Because now we're like, what? Two PNGs? Wow. So that's my thought. Anyway, let's jump to another question. We got an audio question here from Jake Rayson. And let me... Uh-oh, hold on. Can't open page. Come on, internet. You know what? Let's do another question.
That happen in the US too? You can't open a page? Oh my god.
My internet's currently taped together, so I think it could be a problem on that end.
I can read another question if you'd like to.
Another question while I wait.
Can you do the name though, Dave? Spiros.
Oh. I got it. Spiros Martzoukos.
Martzoukos, there you go. I've just started fiddling around with SVG sprites a bit, and the thing that I haven't figured out yet in my SVG workflow are things like removing the inline styles from paths and polylines and lines, etc., such that, you know, like sometimes those SVG elements have things like fill with a color and stroke with a color. So, and Spiros sounds like he knows that if you remove those inline styles from those elements, then you can override them in CSS. So you can't override them. What's that?
Actually, you can override them. You can override presentation attributes in CSS, even if they're present in the SVG.
Oh, interesting. So you can override. Do you need to use important or anything, or will it just take the CSS over the...
No, presentation attributes contribute to the CSS cascade, but they are like the lowest in the list. Like presentation attributes can override the browser specific style sheets, but everything else like inline styles or CSS styles, external styles, all of those will override styles in the presentation attributes. You don't have to remove them.
Interesting. So it's the opposite of CSS in a way, is where CSS or in HTML, if you put a style attribute on, they're very strong, but in SVG, they're very weak.
A style attribute is not the same as the presentation attributes, you know, because in SVG, you have the presentation attributes, and you can also, Well, you can, so presentation attributes are the shortened way for setting a CSS property on an SVG element. You can, they are different from style attributes because, you know, you can use a style attribute and a presentation attribute on an SVG element, but the styles inside the style attribute are going to override the presentation attributes.
Ah, got it.
Yeah.
So these are diff- this is not, these aren't inline styles he's talking about. They're just presentational attributes on the shapes. There is something that has to do with, if you do set a presentational attribute that it stops a cascade, right? Like if the if a path element has a fill, I can't then set, for example, the fill on the SVG element and expect it to cascade down to the path if it has a presentational attribute on it, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure because, you know, in this case, you're talking about both of them are presentation attributes, and one of them is, you know, more like low level than the other. So I would expect the one on the path to be more specific than the one on the SVG element.
Right. So it just might be safer in general to remove presentational attributes. I mean, I know that they're easily overridden and stuff, but I feel like that you do get some extra strength if they're just not there at all and you intend to style that stuff through CSS. But, you know, who knows? So Spiros is asking about that, and he's asking about cleaning up empty group tags, and he's asking about just in general optimizing SVG. And so he's asking about any resources for that. But if you have more thoughts, go with that first, and then we'll talk about.
There are optimization tools. I've tweeted about them a couple of times. I've also included them in my talk. I like the Peter Collingridge, I think. He has this online tool. I prefer this one over SVGO and other tools because you get to see the result of applying a certain optimization live. You know, when you load an SVG, you see that SVG on the website, and then you get to check or uncheck the kind of optimizations you want to apply. And sometimes there are certain optimizations that could break your SVG if you use them. So you could, you know, check, for example, I want to remove all empty groups. You can do that. That never hurts. You can, sometimes it's good and safe to combine paths. That would decrease the file size, but sometimes the combining paths totally completely breaks your SVG. So whenever you check an option on that online tool, you get to see the result and, you know, eventually do certain optimizations and not do others, depending on which suits your needs and which doesn't break your SVG. Mm.
That's really nice, especially because I feel like Dave even has a story about using SVGO and having it do something unexpected. And
yeah. So I ran everything through SVGO and it changed all my IDs on all my paths. So, or like my use elements or my symbol elements, I had, you know, SVG, you know, ID or sorry, symbol ID icon house or something. And then when I ran it through SVGO, it like ended up as IDA, IDB, IDC. And it was like, oh, geez, I have no idea what's happening with SVGO.
Yeah.
I know it's a great tool, but I was just like, I don't know. This is not good for me. So,
yeah, it is. It happened to me, too, like 3 or 4 days ago. I was working on an article coming up for Code Drops. So I was working on this demo, and I used SVGO. It was my first time using it. I always use that online tool that I mentioned before. So I wanted to try SVGO out, and you know, I was animating one element, and suddenly after optimizing it, you know, another element was just started animating. I don't know why that happened or how it happened. So I ended up using the original SVG again and optimizing it online. And, you know, it could break your SVG. So yeah, being able to visualize the results of the optimizations online is great. I definitely recommend that tool.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Nice. And there's, you know, there's other ways to optimize SVG that, both of these tools probably do. For example, the only reason you would have an empty group tag is because you downloaded it from somewhere, probably, and it was created in some vector editing tool like Illustrator or Inkscape or something, and it just added those in there because that's just part of that how that software works. But another way that those software works is that it uses some level of precision that it probably errs on being pretty high. So if a point is at, you know, you might think, well, they're just points. This is draw a line from 0, 0 to 15, 15. Well, that point doesn't necessarily have to be at 15. It could be at 15.0218, like 14.97321. You'll see that stuff in SVG all the time. That's probably more specific than it will ever need to be rendered at. And a lot of these SVG tools will reduce the precision, and reducing the precision makes the file size smaller. So that's something that would be really hard to do by hand, but a tool can do.
Yeah, but that's also one of the things that could break your SVG. Believe me, I've tried it. Sometimes you have to go with 3 or 4 decimal numbers. You know, just try with 3. If it doesn't break, try 2. If it doesn't break, try 1. It might break at 1, so you'd have to go with 2.
Mm-hmm. I suppose it depends on how large it renders.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hopefully that stuff is useful. Maybe we should do a sponsor as we're getting on in the show a little bit. Environments for Humans are promoting their frontendsummit.com. That's the URL that will forward you to the right place there. So frontendsummit.com, it's a 1-day conference coming up August 21st. That's 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., but that's in the, you know, that's central time in the U.S. So adjust for your own time zones there. But you can attend it from anywhere because it's online. You know, you open it up. There's a chat room. You're watching the presenters speak live through live video. And that's the deal. So it's kind of like there's a lot of, like, what is the tooling like? Here's Adam Simpson's talking about Sublime and Vim and stuff and making sure your code editor is really good. Neil Reinecker from Sparkbox is talking about all the tooling that you can use for front end developers. The day ends, like I've said before, with Ben Allman, who's going to talk about Grunt and like what's going on with Grunt. Oh man, Dave's going to be at it. Everybody likes Dave, right?
I'll be there.
And right at, so you're, it goes Dave, then John David Dalton talking about browser testing, who's like Captain Performance and Lodash and stuff. And then Ben Allman. Wow, it sounds like a day not to miss. Use coupon code 20% or Shop Talk Show for 20% off. Yay. Front End Summit. It's going to be awesome. So it's exactly the type of stuff we talk about on Shop Talk Show.
And that's coming up real soon. So get going.
August 21st, and this is probably going to come out on close to that. So
the day make before.
It's not going to be that close, is it?
No. We're good. So everyone, make sure to sign up. This is your last chance.
Let's do another question.
All right, I got the audio question.
A couple of questions for your special guest, Sarah Sirudan. I'd like to use cacheable SVG sprites for icons. What's the best way to achieve this, and can you highlight the pros and cons of the different techniques? Also, I'm currently testing an external symbol SVG file. What's the most solid method of testing for browser support of SVG symbol? Does the has feature test work robustly? Many thanks.
All right, that was Jake Grayson wondering about cacheable SVG sprites. Sarah, have you done any of this?
Not really. I've read Chris's article on the matter, you know, using the use tag, but that's the extent of what I know about this, to be honest.
Yes, Chris? You know, there's not too much to it. What Sarah said, though, the use tag is kind of like, I want to use a bit of SVG that's been defined elsewhere. So it's kind of like, it's kind of magical. You know, you're like, go find this piece of SVG and then put it here. And it's kind of like Shadow DOM. It literally is a Shadow DOM boundary when you go do that. And where you reference that can be in a number of places. It could be somewhere else on the page itself, meaning like I've drawn the little grunt icon face over here. I want to draw it again over here. So just do the use tag and reference that little grunt, whatever shapes are necessary to do that, which is one of the reasons you might use a group tag, those G tags, because whatever paths are inside that group, you can reference it by ID and say, draw it over here. Now, possibly a better way to do that is to reference it from an external file. And the reason is the browser sees that you're referencing an external file and it goes and gets it from across the internet and then it caches it. If you're serving the proper cached headers, of course. So that's nice because that means that you don't have to embed all of these SVG symbols right into your HTML document. You can just reference them from elsewhere and then leverage the browser caching. There's really no, that's it. It's just that doesn't work in IE anything. So you just have to be aware of that. And likely there's a little cool script that if it tests that it does that isn't supported, it will just AJAX for that file anyway, which is what would be happening anyway because it's just a browser request, and then grab that little bit of SVG content and then just drop it on the page like it's inline SVG, which will then work because those browsers support that. So it's actually a pretty simple little technique, and I would highly recommend it. Jake, he was asking though about the browser support for the symbol element. I wonder if you know anything about that, Sarah. Like I think symbol's pretty cool, but like, is there weird bugs with that or anything?
For now, to the extent that I've used it, no, I haven't found any bugs. Of course, it is useful to know, like I said before, if you know about the viewbox and preserve aspect ratio, it's going to make working with everything a lot easier, and especially that the symbol element creates a new, establishes a new coordinate system. So I did work a little with the symbol element, about coordinate systems and all of that. But, you know, particular support for the symbol element in particular, no, I'm not sure there's a resource for that. You're just going to have to test it yourself.
That's why you're doing all the research and stuff that you're doing, it's a weird new world, all this SVG stuff. There's a lot to know. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, so it's like, you're just going to have to do some testing. And I think that's true. You might find some crazy stuff that nobody's ever come across before.
Exactly. Definitely. Yeah. And if you find any bugs, you know, just report them. And the implementers of the specification, they work really hard on it and it's going to be fixed. So you're going to be helping with that. So please do test. And I was talking about Modernizer. There is, you can use Modernizer to test for SVG support, inline SVG support, SMIL animations. There's even a test for SVG clip paths. I'm not really sure why there is a specific test for clip paths and not for SVG masks, for example. So yeah, maybe someone could contribute and add tests for different features depending on use cases that might be useful for people.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And yes, Modernizer, isn't that weird? I don't know if they've actually done it yet, but I think they were going to deprecate possibly Modernizer just .svg because it's too broad. Like,
yeah,
what does that
like,
mean exactly?
There's not like Modernizer SVG and Modernizer SVG that I actually want to use, right?
Right.
Yeah, I hope they don't do that.
Yeah, well, they probably can't because it's in too widespread of use. But it's kind of funny that the answer to that is a little vague. And I think what they are testing for is SVG in an object. So it's like, what does that matter, you know? But they do have a test for SVG as image. In fact, I helped put that one in there just because I noticed somebody else. What this is relates to Jake's question because he was talking about the has feature, which is a DOM API, which literally the only thing in the entire world that it works for is SVG as image. That's the only thing that it returns a correct answer for. And I think it's one of those weird browser things. Like at one point, some browser implemented it. It happens to return the correct results for SVG as image, and now they have to support it forever. You know, even though that thing never took off, it's largely a deprecated feature. They can never deprecate it because so many things support it. You know, it's just one of those weird things.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, Jake, I just put my blog over to external SVG, and it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. So it feels clean. Like icon fonts are great. I still like them, but it doesn't feel clean. The SVG with U's and symbol elements, it feels great. I had to use SVG for Everybody by Jonathan Neal. Chris, I think you pointed me into that direction. But
that's the one that I was just talking about that AJAX is in the little bits. Let's do another one here. Let's do this John Mills one. How about that?
All right, John Mills writes in, since you asked for some more technical questions, I could use some help with sizing SVG images on a site. I just finished my first project working with SVG icons with the use element, and I found that resizing can be a real pain. Sometimes the element will render in the wrong space or at the wrong size, and I can't figure out the logic of it. I'm setting the viewport attribute on my SVG symbol tag, but that doesn't always help. Is there a way you guys can give us a rundown of how SVGs actually render on a page and the best way to size scale them.
Okay. First of all, did he say that he's setting the viewport attribute?
Yeah, that's what it says. So that might be the problem.
Yeah, the viewport, there is no viewport attribute. There is a viewbox attribute. I'm not sure if it's a typo on his side or if he's actually using it. If he's using it, then that's the first thing that's wrong about this. The view, there is no viewport attribute. The viewbox, actually, when you're using the use element, you get to specify a height and width of the use element. This height and the and width is going to be used to create the viewport for the contents that that the use is referencing. Okay, you following me so far?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so the height and the width of the use element are going to create the viewport. And on the symbol, he set symbol, right?
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. On the symbol element accepts a viewbox attribute and a preserve aspect ratio attribute. Now you have a viewport height and the width on the use element, and you have a viewbox and preserve aspect ratio on the symbol element. And well, I'm not sure how to explain this here, but following my tutorials, the stuff that I said in my article, it's going to be kind of, you know, you're going to be able to predict how it's going to render, you know. As soon as you specify the height and width, which is the viewport, you get to specify the viewbox and preserve aspect ratio any way you want so that it scales in or out and you can position it in the space. I would have to see, you know, an exact use case to know exactly what's happening. But since he asked about viewport and how it's rendering, then yeah, this is how I would answer it. You know, you have a viewport, viewbox, preserve aspect ratio.
I'm trying to guess what the problem is, you know, because it seems like he's doing this type of thing, but then having troubles with, you know, the space around them or whatever. And it's, a lot of this has to do with the SVG was created originally. You know, like, let's say you went to the Noun project and you downloaded a little baseball icon and you opened it up in Illustrator just to take a look at what you got. That baseball might have been drawn in on a canvas where it doesn't start at 0, 0. It's just somewhere in the middle of that canvas is the little baseball is drawn. Not every single SVG is like cropped right to the edges of the artwork. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So
yes.
Like, right. So if you like then use it with the symbol tag or whatever you want to do, there's no adjustment to the view box that's going to help you get that baseball to hug against the left edge. It's just never going to do that until you go manipulate that path essentially to start closer to the edge of what ends up being the view box.
He could test with the view box, you know, instead of starting at 0, 0, he could start at...
Yeah, actually, I misspoke there. You could just set and make the view box start at a different coordinate level. It's just you're getting into tricky territory there, because if you adjust the view box such that you change the aspect ratio of it, then the baseball's not going to be circular anymore. It might get ovular.
Well, actually, you know, the view box, when you change the first two values of the view box, the min X and the min Y, and then, you know, min X, min Y, and then with the width and height, you can create a crop area. So you can crop, you know, if the baseball is not positioned at the top left area, you can crop the SVG in a way that, you know, just crop it to the shape. But you're going to have to... If you know how the viewbox behaves and preserve aspect ratio, you're going to be able to, you know, crop it and position it any way you want.
Yeah, I didn't even realize. Is the first two numbers are min 0 and min y, and then the next two, they're not another coordinate, but they're width and height?
Yeah, first one is min x, and the second one is min y, and then there's a width and a height. It's like you're specifying the origin, the min x and min y, kind of like the upper left a corner of the view box, and then you specify the area of the view box with the height and the width.
Interesting. I always thought it was just a second point, but I never really dug into it. So that's the thing I learned today, I guess. Yeah, very, very interesting stuff. That's good luck, John.
Set you on the right path. And next question. We have some questions specifically for Sarah. I'm going to jump down.
Maybe I'll do a Linda real quick, just because we're 15 minutes.
And then we're, okay.
It's just lynda.com. It's for bettering yourself online, essentially. It's like bigger than a university, but just all videos taught online. So I bet so many of you have heard of it and have been members in the past. I have a course on there all about learning WordPress. In fact, those are some of their more popular classes, are the training courses for CMSs and stuff. But look at all this stuff in here. There's, you know, the classes on learning PHP and just foundations of programming, that kind of thing, if you're looking to get into programming, but that type of thing. There's tons of like Adobe software training. So all this kind of stuff that we talk about here on Shop Talk, and then like a wider circle of things that are a little bit outside of the normal stuff that we talk about, like backend stuff and database stuff that occasionally comes up that we don't talk to that much. Then a wider circle of stuff like how to run a business and movie software and stuff like that we almost never talk about. And then a circle even wider than that talks about things that we never even talk about at all. The scope of stuff on lynda.com is so wide and so huge, and you get access to absolutely all of it when you sign up. And speaking of which, if you sign up and use lynda.com/shoptalk, you get 7 free days. And I like the idea. I feel like we should do something at CodePen sometime. Like, you should, and I know we've gotten a tweet like this in the past, but it's kind of like, you got to plan your 7 days. Like, know if you're going to like have like, you know, you're going to fly to Lebanon to see Sarah, you know, you're going to have a whole bunch of time on the plane, right? So like, you might want to sign up for the 7 free day trial right before your course, get a bunch of stuff ready to go so you can watch it all on the plane, kind of thing. Like timing your 7 free day trial for like the perfect time, you know, it's pretty cool.
That would be, we should do, I want to hear some stories. I want to hear like how people like scheduled it out. Just like, I'm going to watch a whole season of TV in 1 week.
Yeah, but that's boring. I want to watch a whole series on designing the web, SVG rollovers with CSS. You know, there's tons of SVG courses on Lynda if you want to learn about the stuff that we're talking about here. Anyway, lots of stuff for lynda.com, lynda.com. Let's do another question.
All right, we got a question kind of right before we started the show. Alaidine Zaug, I think I'm pronouncing that terribly, writes in.
I think his first name is Alaidine. That's an
Alaidine.
Name.
Alaidine. Z-A-O-U-G. Zaug.
Zaug. Yeah, his family name is not Lebanese, so I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Zaug. Okay, here we go. hi, Sarah. Is there any simple way to work with SVG? And in your opinion, working with SVGs, is that going to be the next trend soon? Okay. Like, what's the simplest way, I think, is to work with SVGs in your workflow? And then what is the next trend? Or is SVGs the next trend?
Well, working with SVGs, the simple way for me personally, it would be to understand SVG code. And then I'm not very Adobe Illustrator savvy. I'm still learning a lot, but I know that recently I've been experimenting with, you know, creating layers and stuff, feeling like a boss doing all of the stuff that I never usually do. But the way you, if you're going to draw your own illustrations, make sure you organize your drawings, you know, the graphic, organize it in Illustrators and name the layers. That is going to help you with get better IDs in the SVG code. And then I'm going back to the first point that I said, understand your SVG code. That's, you know, for me, that's just it. This is how I do SVG. You know, I just do stuff in Illustrator and export it, optimize it, of course, and, you know, try to manipulate it, change it any way I need to do it. That's just it. And as far as, you know, whether it's a trend or not, I like to quote, I don't remember what he said, you know, literally. I don't know if you've seen Dmitry Baranovsky's talk, You Don't Know SVG. He said that if you don't know SVG, he said that you can't call yourself a front-end developer if you don't know SVG.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Bold.
The whole talk, I did watch that talk, and the whole talk was pretty, he's just an intense guy. Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing how much passion he has for SVG. It's like, go learn it, go do it. It was awesome. Very, very inspirational.
Yeah. He's Raphael, if anybody remembers that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And now Snap SVG. Yeah.
Wow. Well, if he did Raphael, then he's been doing SVG since the beginning, in my mind. Because that's all SVG was really used for. It was like, you can use it, but then you need to use Raphael to make VML in IE and all that stuff. And it sounds like that's great. I'm going to watch that. It's in the queue.
Yeah, you should.
Putting it in the
queue. Are there any CSS questions?
We have... Yeah, there was one. Let's see.
Only one? Oh, my God.
Hold on. We have some. Hold on. Okay, this is from Samoa Khan. I've asked this question before. Actually, I created a dummy site for a news magazine, whatever you want to name it. And then there's like this total just dummy URL. We can hopefully it's not like whatever, put viruses on your computer. Okay, it's technnbuzz.com/magazine.
It's not there anymore, so don't worry about that.
Okay. Well, you can click the index.html. It's fully responsive, but I've just used CSS 3 columns. What you think would be enough in the future to create a magazine site? So I guess the question is, do you think CSS 3 columns is enough to kind of like make a magazine site, like a newspapery kind of site?
Well, it depends on the design. You know, if you're just distributing text over like several columns, then yeah, that could be very, very much, you know, enough. But if you're going to float images in different ways, spread an image, for example, over two columns instead of one, span it over two columns or instead of one. If you want to flow text around irregular shapes, it all boils down to how the design is. And, you know, there are different CSS techniques that you can use to create a magazine layout, including the latest CSS shapes, maybe even masking. Depends on the design, really. If it's just about multi-column text, then yeah, CSS columns is more than enough, in my opinion. And I'm really excited about some of the features in the CSS figures specification, mm-hmm. Like floating an image to the top, floating it to the top or to the bottom instead of just to the right and the left. There's some real potential in that too. It's going to make CSS columns and magazine layouts more flexible, definitely.
How does that work? How does float to the bottom work? Was that one of those things that was in that recent, I feel like there was a List Apart article that kind of had some stuff like that in it, but I can't really remember.
Top 10 CSS one-liners to replace native apps.
Yeah, by Howcom. Howcom is the editor of the specification. He's also the father of CSS.
And he was the one who said CSS regions were considered harmful. And then, Sarah, you wrote an article totally debunking his article, and they never retracted any of it anyway. Gonna just have a drink now.
Yeah, sure.
but you wrote like a rebuttal to that regions post, because regions was pretty great, and you were, your whole argument was this is actually super useful, and the kind of use cases you described are actually really kind of weak use cases or something. Was that right?
Yeah, you know, the examples that he was showing, you know, CSS regions isn't even meant to do those things. And I mentioned in my article that if you can do something using another technique other than CSS regions, and that other technique is better than CSS regions, then yeah, by all means, do use that other technique. But there are certain use cases, you know, CSS regions gives you a finer level of control. You know, you're able to flow content in different areas. And, you know, we're going to have CSS grids sometime in the future too. You can, you know, just choose where you want the text to flow. CSS regions, you know, he just restricted CSS regions use cases to just a few. I agree that the examples in the specification should have been different, because he thought that the examples didn't really show the potential or what CSS regions are meant for. So when I was reading his article, I was like, no, 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 no. I didn't agree with anything he said. Yeah, so, and then Divya told me, she was like, how about you write what you think about CSS regions? And so I said, you know, yeah, I could do that. And I did.
Yeah, that was great. I loved it. I love that article.
Thank you.
So where do you stand? How do you feel about figures? Right now it's kind of implemented in opera, but is figures something you think you want?
Yeah, I do.
I don't know anything about figures. Can we explain what figures are?
All right, taking a step, I'll try to give, maybe Sarah can do a better job. Sarah will do a better job, Sarah. What are figures, CSS figures?
To be honest, I haven't read the entire specification. I only read parts of it when I was working on the CSS regions article. But the stuff that I remember, there are different options for floating elements. For example, floating images to the top or to the bottom. There are float offsets, like you can float an image to the right or to the left, whatever, and then specify an offset. So it's kind of like relative positioning. You know, you move the image from its original place, but instead of keeping, you know, when you use relative positioning, the image is moved, but its original space is preserved and no other content takes that space. But if you're using the figure specification and using a float offset, the content, the text around the image is actually going to wrap and fill in the areas where the image would have normally been. Am I being clear here? Because I know my English doesn't always help. Yeah, so I think this is great because, you know, CSS exclusions, which used to be one specification with CSS shapes, and then they were separated into two. The CSS exclusion specification, last time I read it, I'm not sure if it has been updated ever since, but it used absolute positioning to position an element somewhere on the screen and then have the text wrap around it. I would rather use float with a float offset than use absolute positioning. So yes, there are definitely certain very useful things in the figure specification. But on the other hand, there are some things that were kind of meant to replace CSS shapes, which I don't agree with. I mean, we have a pretty stable and really good CSS specification. So some things in the figure specification may be redundant in this area, but it definitely has some features that I would love to see implemented. They would be really useful.
There's also this kind of concept of pages, I think, which is kind of new. It's the idea that you can like float to page two and like you could float an advertisement to page two, but it's like then like we need now we are dealing with like multiple pages that we thumb through. It's really, for me and from my point of view, it's super catered to magazine layouts, basically like magazines on the web, that'll fix it, you know?
I think that's my problem or feelings about it. Yeah. I'm not really sure what exactly he works, so I don't want to start saying things and then be like, oh no, that's not what I meant. But I think that Howcom has some kind of work where he works with prints and paged media. So his work with those kinds of media affected some of the features in the specification. I don't see a lot of paged media on the web. You know, I don't see a websites, you're not going to see a lot of websites separated into pages, you know, unless it's like literally a digital magazine that wants to preserve or recreate a paged magazine layout on the web. So I'm not really sure that if there are going to be really a lot of use cases for pages on the internet.
Yeah, it could be chicken or the egg, you know, right? It could be like once the tools are there, then we'll see more of it. It's hard to say. But yeah, I agree. Like I'm not busting with ideas for it either.
Like, gosh, I really can't wait till everyone has, like, whatever, 5-page blog post that I have to thumb through. God, stop, eject, internet. Goodness gracious, I'm done.
So Alidan was asking about, it was Samulia. I'm the worst. Is CSS three columns enough to make layouts? Like Sarah said, it completely depends on what the design of it is. Columns is literally just columns. There was a CSS Tricks article recently by Katie DeCora about how to make them responsive, and I feel like that's worth looking at in this case because it's you have to be really careful about how you use columns, I think. If they're too tall, then it gets into a situation where you're scrolling up and down to read the columns. They feel pretty unnatural for reading to me. I think they should be used lightly at best, in general. And I don't know. And then be even clever and careful about them to be like, oh, how tall is the viewport? And maybe only activate columns when the viewport is tall enough to support them. Because I feel like as soon as you're like forcing people to scroll up and down to read, you're really doing them a disservice. So think about that. Check out that article.
Columns would be very useful with, you know, viewport units. And it depends on his browser support, what browsers he's targeting, whether he can use viewport units or not.
Yeah, that's a great idea, right? Like is the make sure that the height of the element that you're applying the things to is less than 100 viewport units, because that's as tall as the browser is. So, yeah, that's a really good idea. All right. Thanks so much for joining us, Sarah. It was a huge pleasure to have you on here. Super smart.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
For those who aren't following you on Twitter and giving you money, how can people follow you, give you money? And then what's one big thing you'd like to plug? What's the thing you'd like to send the world off to think about or check out?
They can follow me, you know, I have an RSS feed for my blog, of course, and they can follow me on Twitter, you know, just click the follow button. Give me money. I'm not sure about that. I don't have a way for that. and what I would like them to send them over, you know, check my articles out, read the tutorials. If you're interested in starting, you know, getting started with SVG, do read the tutorials. They are long. I'm not going to say that they're short, but I've used a lot of visual examples, a lot of images. So, you know, you could, the article, the written part of the article is a lot shorter than it looks. The images are going to hopefully help. The interactive demo will help to just, you know, read my articles. That's all.
Perfect. Great. Well, thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, for listening and coming out live to the chat room. We really appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. Vote us up in your podcatcher of choice. We really appreciate those 5-star ratings. And Chris, you got anything else you want to send over?
ShopTalkShow.com.